Welcome to Baseball America's Arizona Fall League podcast, sponsored by Bowman. Bowman, the first place to find the game's future stars. Visit tops.com for the latest Bowman product news. Now it's time to talk baseball.
Thanks for joining us, folks. Kyle Glazer alongside Josh Norris here in the Baseball America studios. Josh, you just returned from covering the first week of the Arizona Fall League. First thing I got to ask you is, so many great prospects, so many guys that we see their names consistently pop up, but this was an opportunity to see a lot of them in a short time frame in action. Coming back, who were the guys that you felt like really jumped out to you or really, in your eyes, maybe even raised their stock a little bit?
I don't know about raised his stock because he was already in top 25 prospect on our thing, but Gleyber Torres was the one who jumped out at me. I got to see him twice. He had a massive opposite field home run, played a smooth shortstop and a second base because David Fletcher was at shortstop that day. Strong throwing arm, just performed, did everything you want, and then saved us from extra innings for a fourth time by going against Rowan Wick. He kind of picked through the curveballs he didn't want, got the fastball he did, and lined it for what would have been a double if he had needed that second extra base, but it was a walk-off single. Just, he was a star, and he looks like a star in the making. It's very clear why he's among the Yankees' top prospects.
You know, it's interesting. I think sometimes we see these younger, toolsy middle infield guys, and sometimes we're like, well, we know it might look good on a highlight reel, but how's it going to play? Those little things you mentioned, laying off the off-speed pitches, controlling the strike zone, coming up in key spots, and it seems like Glaber's a guy who checks all those boxes, which in a lot of ways can be the separator for these young, toolsy middle infielders.
Yeah, and he's 19 years old, and yeah, like I said, with that at bat, I saw it last year with Rafael Devers in Greenville. He was here for Greensboro, and he came up, I think it was a pinch hit role, and he just kind of worked the guy to get the pitch he wanted, kind of fouled off everything that he didn't want until he got the pitch he wanted and lined it for a home run just inside the right field foul pole. And Glaber showed that same ability to just pick through pitches and get what he wants. Just all around, he was excellent all week.
You know, Glaber's a guy that we know is very highly touted, very highly regarded. One guy who just continues to do things this year when really coming in, no one knew about him was Ramon Laureano. He was a guy that went into Lancaster, you know, 16th round pick from a JC 2 years ago, older, smaller, not a guy that fit much of a prospect profile, but he goes out and leads the entire minor leagues in OPS, continues to perform after the jump to AA, shows up week one of the Arizona Fall League and wins Player of the Week. I mean, what did you see from Laureano?
He just hit, man. Every time I'm doing the video, I'm labeling it this morning, and it's pitcher versus Ramon Laureano in parentheses, hit. Pitcher versus Ramon Laureano in parentheses, double. He's very quiet about it, but he just hits. He's one of those Astros prospects who's going to jump up on you.
You know, it's interesting. I saw him a little bit in Lancaster when I was in the Cal League the first part of this year, and then I spoke to a couple evaluators about him, and they talk about, you know, there might not be a carrying tool, but he does everything well. And it's one of those things where if you do everything well, you control the strike zone, there's no real weaknesses in your game, someone will find a spot for you, and that's why I made sure to put him on my Cal League top 20. That's why I think it's looking smart how we've, you know, focused on him a little bit now that he's starting to perform. Because you're right. I mean, it seems like every at-bat, every swing he takes, you know, you don't see him take many bad swings. You really don't.
And you can do that in the Fall League because there are a lot of really good pitchers and he just didn't. But if you have a lot of fives on your card, that's okay. I mean, that's still a major leaguer.
Right, that's still a big leaguer. I mean, as long as you don't have any threes on there, which he really doesn't.
No.
I mean, you know, I think there's a lot here that's going to play, and it's been interesting to see, okay, it's one thing to do it in Lancaster in the Cal League as an older prospect, and then, you know, even though he did it once he got bumped up to AA, it was a smaller sample size, so I think there maybe was still rightfully a little bit of skepticism, kind of an okay but. But I think for him to go out in the Fall League and just gangbusters against the best of the best of the best, it's like, okay, this might be real.
Yeah, I mean, it's a hitter's league for sure. And the first week of the Fall League is usually pitchers knocking off the rust after 2-3 weeks of not pitching. So those games take 3.5-4 hours, and they're a lot of scores.
I mean, he passed the eye test for you?
Yeah,
for sure.
Absolutely. Okay. I mean, most of those guys, I mean, there's a lot of really, really good prospects out there. Last year, Wilson Contreras was in there. Now he's in the National League Championship Series. Gary Sanchez was in there. That was his real turning point last year. And then he comes in to 20 home runs in like a month and a half.
52 games, 20
yeah,
home 52 runs.
52 games, 20 home runs, and he's looking very much like everything they thought he would be before his stock dropped, and now it's, you know, back up. But if you go out there, you will see studs, period.
You know, one guy that's always intrigued me, and we saw Tyler O'Neill hit a baseball 400 feet off of a tee.
Yep.
And also here in the first week of the fall league, I believe he just hit his third home run last night.
Three.
You know, it's interesting. He's a guy that when I was doing the Mariners midseason prospect update, I mean, I knew the name. I knew he was a guy. But as I started talking to people, they were saying, this guy hits home runs, hits balls so far and so hard to every part of the park. I haven't seen anything like it. I mean, people who I know are not people who like to embellish things, I should say, in the game, saying things like, honestly, he hits home runs to right field that look like Prince Fielder got into one, you know, hitting from the left side. And then some of the balls he hits, you know, to any park at any elevation, I mean, sea level, whatever, it's going to go 450 feet. So for him to hit 400 feet off of a tee, then go out three bombs right off the bat in the fall league, I mean, just what were your impressions of him and how crazy his power is?
Well, first of all, he's a guy that he's so muscled up, it's frightening. He makes
Wreck-It Ralph. His double-A team had a meme of Wreck-It Ralph, and I remember thinking, that kind of works.
He makes it look like Popeye should get in the gym. I mean, he's stunning. It just 400 feet off a tee, and he called the shot. That's what he said. He tried to do it last year and came up a little short, and this year he was going to do it, and he did it. And it didn't even fully hit me what he had just done. Because usually in that hitting challenge, they, like, aim for the guy in the hamster ball or the target down the line.
The dinosaur.
The dinosaurs were new this year. But he just, I'm hitting it out, and it wasn't down the lines. It was to the left center field alleyway, which was about 400 feet once it got onto the berm, which you got to think about how crazy that is.
Absolutely. But it's interesting because his power plays in games.
Right. In the game that I did see him homer, he was about 385, but he didn't get it. He did not get it all, and it was a line drive, and it just kept going. He's unbelievably strong, and you mentioned he can hit it anywhere. Safeco is going to be no problem for him.
You know, it's interesting. They talk about, you know, he's such a muscled guy, but he's an underrated athlete as well in the sense his bat speed is exceptional. It's not like he's a big, stiff, right-handed hitter who just, you know, muscles everything up. His bat speed, the words I keep hearing are lightning, exceptional, elite. You add in the fact, too, that he's actually a decent enough athlete. He handles right field pretty well, has a great arm. You know, anytime you have a guy who does all that and he's not just another big muscled up guy, there's something there. And I'm going to be curious to see, you know, if I feel like we've been on him a little bit. But even before this year, he wasn't a top 100 prospect for us. By midseason, he was. And now you'd have to imagine with the season he put up, the adjustments he made controlling the strike zone, and now what he's doing in the fall league, he's got to be a consensus top 50 by next year, wouldn't you say?
Something like that. I mean, I don't like to put a guy in a 50 or a 100 or a 25 until I can sit down and look at the field. But yeah, probably. He's got the bat speed there like a Clint Frazier, maybe not a Javi Baez just yet, but a Clint Frazier, who is also jacked.
Yep.
Different hair. But yeah, I mean, he's the son of two
Mr. Canada, Terry O'Neill. I mean, like, the bodybuilder of the country. That's his dad, and you can
He knows
see
how
it.
To train, yeah.
Yeah.
He's exceptional, and the Mariners have an easy number one prospect. I mean, they had some other guys out there, too.
Well, Kyle Lewis is probably their number one, but O'Neill's, I mean, you've got two guys that are going to be top 50. And it's a closer argument than I think a lot of people think. I'm doing the Mariners prospect handbook.
Far be it for me to tell you who your number
but
one
is. But no, you're right. I mean, it's something where I think going in, it was kind of funny. You hear people around saying things like, oh, the Mariners, it's nice and easy. Kyle Lewis is a clear number one. And don't get me wrong, Kyle Lewis is the number one, spoiler alert. It's a lot closer than a lot of people think, to the point we're talking about, okay, maybe Lewis is a number 30 prospect and O'Neill's a number 40. I mean, these guys are legit studs. And I think Tyler O'Neill, hopefully after this coming out party, if you will, the fall league, more people are going to understand and appreciate the talent he has.
And they've got a couple guys you know about in the fall league.
Luis Gohara.
Luis Gohara was bumping 97 and with a dastardly curveball, but he's doesn't really have any experience in upper levels just yet.
Right.
And then Thiago Vieira, my goodness, comes in. I remember I was getting up to leave that game because I needed to go to a different game, and that was going to go in 11 innings again, and they had gone 11 innings the previous night. I said, all right, this is going to be some weirdo out of the bullpen. And I hear who it is. I'm going to sit back down. And he hit 100 or more eight times.
Yep.
I think he ended with one of the best pitches I've ever seen, which is 102, and it was just cutting like it had somewhere to be, away from Mauricio Dubon, and he spun himself into the ground like a corkscrew.
You know, Taigo Vieira is fascinating to me because, again, a guy I saw even earlier this year in Bakersfield, and he was 96-97. There was no triple digits. And then a couple months go by, and I didn't get a chance to see Bakersfield just because of scheduling and U.S. Collegiate National Team and all the other stuff. And I'm on the phone with some of the Mariners folks, and they're like, yo, he's hitting 100 now. I'm like, really? I'm like, yeah, he's hitting 100, and he hasn't allowed a run in 6 weeks. It's like, really? And then I kept checking on him, and by the end of the year, what was 96-97 and turned into 100 was now 102 by the end. And it's interesting, talking to the Mariners people, there's just so much, they all feel so proud because he was a raw arm Brazilian, picked up 6 years ago, even coming into this year, command delivery wasn't there, straightened himself out, and now he's an oh my goodness type of relief pitcher.
Yeah, I mean, they're gonna, if they add him to the bullpen eventually with Edwin Diaz, they've got a
and Dan Altavilla, who's hitting 100.
They've got a homegrown Betances, Chapman, Miller type situation.
They just need a lefty to add in there. Yeah. But yeah, no.
And also, we're talking about two Brazilians here in Gohara and Vieira, which is a little weird to think about. The Mariners have the monopoly on Brazilians.
You know what? And it just goes to show, I mean, obviously you have to see the hotbeds of the Dominican and the Venezuela, but there's always going to be talent, you know, to find.
Max Kepler, Germany.
Yep.
I mean, Tim Tebow, Philippines.
So we'll get to Tebow in a second, but first I want to focus on the other guys. You know, you mentioned Gohara and Vieira. Talk about some of the other guys you talked about were position players. What other pitchers really stood out to you during your week out there?
You know, I don't think anybody really... Oh, James Caprillion. I'm sorry. I forgot about James Caprillion. I don't mean to sound like I'm banging on a lot of Yankees here, but James Caprillion was impressive. I mean, he hadn't pitched in a competitive game outside the fall, the Instructional League since late April. And he was, you know, he had all four pitches working. He was 92, 96, touch 97. Slider, kind of cut slider away at 87. And he had the changeup and the curveball working too. And he struck out 6 in 3 innings of one hit ball. I mean, there's a better way to announce your presence that you're back. He was the number one, you know, first round pick overall for a reason.
And a frontline ace at one of college baseball's premier programs. I mean, this isn't some guy that is under the radar. Everyone's known him, just needed to get healthy, and now he is. And he looks like the first rounder he was.
I remember I saw that week, I saw him and two other dudes whose names I can't remember right now in the UCLA rotation come here to North Carolina for the Irish Classic. And I think they allowed 3 hits all weekend. Caprillion struck out 15. The next guy threw a one-hitter. And the guy after that was like a two-hitter. It was like a run.
As a native SoCal kid, I can tell you that when John Savage wants a pitcher, he gets a pitcher. And I have never seen another program that will lose 5, 6, 7 frontline pitchers to the draft and somehow still have 5 more coming in. I mean, if you're a pitcher and you go to UCLA, you're going to get coached up, and you're going to turn out to be likely really freaking good. And I think Caprillion, as long as he stays healthy, and you know, if he can do what he did in the fall league, I think the Yankees, you know, have to be excited, because you look at their starting rotation now, considering the steps back some of their guys took, like Luis Severino and
Pineda.
Michael Pineda, and then you look at other guys like, you know, Chad Green, Luis Sessa, who are fine, but I don't think anyone looks at them and says, ooh, this is my, you know, number three starter for the next decade.
But I will say that getting both those guys in a deal for Justin Wilson...
Oh, I agree. It was a great acquisition, but I'm just saying, I think there's definitely room for Caprillion in the Yankees rotation as long as he keeps doing what he's doing.
Yeah, Brian Cashman, on the record, said this year there was an outside chance of him making the major leagues this past year, if he didn't get hurt, and obviously he did, but it was up to allegedly 99 before he got hurt. So you've got him, and they've got Chance Adams coming up right now, who came from closer at DBU to one of the best starters in the minor leagues. They acquired Justice Sheffield from Cleveland. They've done a really good job restocking their farm system.
Absolutely. So we've talked about Mariners prospects and Yankees prospects as groups of guys that really stood out to you. Was there another team whose crop out there, you know, just seared into your memory a little bit?
I mean, there were some guys that I didn't get to see. I really wish I had gotten to see the Mesa Club. They had, I mean, Eloy Jimenez was on that club. Ian Happ was on that club. And another guy who I think is an underrated prospect is Greg Allen. With the Indians,
very much
he can
agree.
He can switch hitter. He's got more than a little power. He can run. He can hit. He's a 5-tool player.
He's a guy that I actually saw at San Diego State, and I got to San Diego State. He was Greg Allen, San Diego State center fielder that year. They went to Lake Elsinore Regional, and he was that when they played UCSB in that Lake Elsinore Regional, and Allen was a guy who I just remember. You know, I saw him there, and then I saw him again at the Cal Carolina Lake All-Star Game this year, and he's a guy. Just wreaks havoc on the base pass. I mean, you mentioned guy who, you know, sprayed the ball all over the field, get on the base pass, do things, just get in a pitcher's head. I mean, he's your classic leadoff hitter who just is going to make life miserable. And even if he's not leading off for you, he can still do enough in the out of the eight spot that to be an effective major leaguer.
I mean, I think he could be a little down further in that lineup. I think he could hit two.
That's the point. You're talking about a guy who with the speed, contact profile, plays a great center field. There's a lot to like there.
Yeah, I mean, you put him in a lineup with Brad Zimmer eventually, and we'll see what Michael Brantley does if he comes back healthy at some point. That Indians lineup,
Not to mention Tyler Naquin, who's up there now.
Yeah, Tyler Naquin. Shout out to Teddy Cahill, Tyler Naquin's number one fan.
Hey, I'm on the Tyler Naquin bandwagon. The guy's amazing.
He was on Teddy Naquin's bandwagon since birth.
Fair point. But yeah, it's interesting. But you mentioned those Cubs and Indians teams. I mean, those are two teams that I think we see a lot of success, obviously, at the major league level, given they're both on the verge of the World Series, potentially. But then you look up and down their system, there's talent everywhere. It's not like they're one of those organizations that are really top-heavy but have nothing at bottom, or one of those organizations where, oh, we have a great farm system, but the whole point of having a good farm system is to create wins at the major league level, and they can't seem to do it. I mean, the Indians and Cubs, I think, are probably, you could argue, the two most complete organizations in baseball right now, given the talent level. The Dodgers as well. So, I mean, two of the top three, you know, maybe someone else I'm sure we're forgetting. But point is, you know, that, okay, we have a great group of guys at the major league level, and we have depth throughout the minor league system.
Yeah, they've done it right.
You know, you mentioned the Dodgers. They had a number of really high-profile prospects out there. Cody Bellinger, Alex Verdugo, Willie Calhoun. Just what were your impressions of that big trio?
I mean, nothing that's going to break anybody's jump off the page here. But, I mean, Cody Bellinger looks like a complete hitter. Looks like he can go line to line, smooth, easy swing from the left side. Verdugo, quickest hips I've seen in a while. He just snakes those suckers through there. And there's easy, easy power there. From his spray charge, it looks like it's all pull. But it's going to go a mile. And Willie Calhoun, for a guy his size, can
just
charge in the ball. Yep. Yeah, he took Dylan Tate way out on the last day I was there, I think.
That was a fun group to watch when they were in Rancho Cucamonga last year, and they helped Rancho Cucamonga get to the Cal League title. I remember seeing that group, and you could definitely see the potential in all of them and seeing the steps forward they've taken. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how they all move forward, because I think they all have strengths, but like every prospect, they all have weaknesses too. Calhoun's defense, Bellinger, I think some people are concerned about his ability to hit for average. Verdugo, there's, you know, some other things there. I think it'll be interesting to see just how they all develop, because at the end of the day, these are talented kids who have a lot more development. There's not any finished products here, but it's exciting to see, here's what they did in high last year, here's what they were able to do in double A this year, and now here's what they're doing in the fall league against the best of the best.
Mm-hmm, no question. And I think with that, we move to the elephant in the room, Mr. Tebow.
Yeah, so obviously, a lot of hype, a lot of hoopla, more fans than ever before for a fall league game. Just what were your initial impressions of just everything?
He's a good draw, but a bad baseball player. He's a big, big boy, a nice fella. He'll talk your ear off about everything, but he can't. He looks like a guy who is almost 30 years old who hasn't played in a decade. I mean, he's against some of the best, and it shows. He, you know, just got his first hit yesterday. Yep. Before that, I think he's now 1-for-14 with like 8 strikeouts. I mean, before I left, he was doing a good job of not just waving at everything. I can give him that. He doesn't like lefties at all. They will murder him. Corey Luttrell was the first strikeout he had. It was, you know, a left-hander coming from way up top, so it was, you know, the ball was coming behind his head, and he swung and missed 3 times. Gabe Spire of the Diamondbacks did the same thing to him. He doesn't belong there. He belongs broadcasting football, period.
You know, I'd be interested to see how it develops. Obviously, it's tricky when, you know, he's also missing weekends. And, you know, it was week one. So I'll be out there November 7th through 11th, which is the second to last week. So at least speaking for myself, I'll be interested to see, you know, how he looks there. Because I think that's always important, too. I mean, you mentioned he looks like a guy who's almost 30 and hasn't played competitive baseball in a very long time. But, you know, it is week one coming back from that. So I'll be curious to see if by week five, week six, once he's had those 30, 40 at-bats and gets a better look at the competition level, what adjustments he makes. I'm hesitant to say anything definitive really about anyone under any circumstances after 1 week. But I do see your point that, you know, there's a pretty steep thing to make up here, and it's not unreasonable to suggest it's too steep.
Yeah, I mean, it's a long haul for anybody to get to the major leagues. And it's a long haul for a lot of these guys in the fall league to get to the major leagues. And they've been playing competitively all their lives, and they've been working toward this goal all their lives, and he's had a decade off. It's tough to be good at anything when you have a decade off from it, unless you're a savant of some kind.
Absolutely.
I mean, and I don't think Tim Tebow is a baseball savant, period.
Well, we'll see how he develops. On the other side of that, I do want to talk, you know, we talked about the guys who really impressed you during the fall league, non-Tim Tebow chapter. Who were some of the guys you saw that maybe, you know, didn't have the best weeks, or I don't know if disappointed is the right word, or maybe weren't what you might have been expecting?
Yeah, I mean, Brent Honeywell he got ripped a little bit, but that was mostly because he left the ball up. I know what Brent Honeywell can do when he's healthy, and he can be very nasty. I assume we'll see him next year here in Durham with Chiwe Hu and Willy Adames, which should be a really fun Durham team. Francis Marte has had issues with his command that day. He walked a lot of people and gave up a lot of hits. I was expecting a little more from him. And we should go back here for a second and mention a guy who kind of did jump out was Stephen Gonsalves, who was
who was
matched up against Marte's that night. You know, he doesn't light up the radar gun. He doesn't hit 90 much,
but he knows how to pitch.
But he can pitch, man. He can put it anywhere, inside, outside, and that changeup is a swing and miss pitch. And he kind of stymied them for three innings, except for Harrison Bader home run. You know, he looked really good. I didn't quite know what to expect from him because I hadn't seen him since Happy League, I don't think, and he was really good. He had some quick innings.
One guy that I think is very interesting, and you had tweeted something about him, and then he actually called you out on it the next day, Travis DeMeritt.
Okay, so let's tell that story. So Travis DeMeritt was facing Luis Gohara on one of the days.
In fairness, has a ridiculous slider. I mean, this pitch was a curve, but the point is he knows how to spin it.
Yeah.
Luis Gohara knows how to spin a baseball.
Either way, he put a breaking ball by him. And DeMeritt kind of twisted up into a little bit of a pretzel. He didn't look good on it.
And wasn't the only guy that threw that, by the way. That's more a testament to Gohara than anything.
Yeah. Well, he learned. The next time out, he faced Gohara, and he hit a home run. And I had tweeted that DeMeritt kind of got twisted into a pretzel by Gohara. And he quote tweets it and comes back and says, "And today?" And I laughed a lot about it because it's funny. But he was actually really impressive in the fall league. He looks like a hitter, and he's really good at second base. I think the Braves got themselves a little bit of a steal in that deal.
You know, it was really interesting because it's funny. I saw him in High Desert a bunch, and then I move out here, and he gets traded out here, and I see him at Camp Zebulon a bunch. You know, he's a guy that you would see one at bat where he was swinging at 55-foot breaking balls, looking like a guy who had no idea what he was doing at the plate. I mean, looking like a high school hitter almost. And then the very next at bat, you'd see a 94-mile-an-hour fastball, good pitch in on the hands, and he'd get his wrists around like that and crush it, you know, down the line for a double. It was so, you know, me and a couple of scouts were talking at times. It's like, okay, which guy is he? Is he the guy that can hit anything to any, you know, any direction of the field with really quick hands, or is he the guy that's going to swing and miss so much at breaking balls in the dirt, it's not going to matter? And I think it's interesting to see how he's developing, because the thing with him was always breaking balls down, fastballs up, he would struggle with those. But performing well in the fall league and developing through that, I think, goes a long way to alleviating some of those concerns. Because there's no question, he's got the athleticism. I do like the guy's makeup, having spoken with him a few times. He can definitely field, he can run, he can make the throws. It's just a matter of, is he going to make the adjustments at the plate to be successful?
He'll get a big test next year at Double A Mississippi.
Yes, he will. you know, you've been to the Arizona Fall League a few years now. This is your fourth one. How would you say just overall the overall crop this year compared to years past? Equal, lesser, higher?
That's a little lower. Well, we'll see, I guess. But the first year I went, it was Chris Bryant, Addison Russell, Mookie Betts.
So it was basically the starting lineup for the 2016 All-Star Game.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. that was a really good year. Who else was there that was really good? Corey Seager was also there. So, yeah, it was a good year.
So it was the 2016 All-Star Game in San Diego, pretty yes. much.
I mean, but last year, like I said, we had Wilson Contreras there. We had Gary Sanchez there. Alex Reyes was there. One year we had Taiwan Walker, Kyle Zimmer, who's still nasty as all heck, but you know, doesn't can't have a functioning healthy. Arm. Mark Appel was there. And then who did he face in that first game? Diamondbacks, Archie Bradley. It was a pretty decent year. And that was all the same day. That was one game and then go to the next one. It was all four pitchers collected. This was a little down. But, again, I think we'll see. If I could be wrong. We'll be talking about you know, Caprillion and Torres and Gonsalves and Marteis and Honeywell as the Seager, Russell, Bryant, Betts foursome in a few years.
Be interesting. And I know we'll have another one of these podcasts when I come back at the end of the month, and we can talk about how different guys, you know, developed from week one to week five and sort of what changed. So I want to add a little bonus content here beyond just the AFL. You were also going around and seeing Instructs.
Yes, I was.
Instructs in all their glory.
Yeah, so a typical day for me out there would have been if there's a 10 a.m. Instructs game, which is, you know, happens because that one of the clubs has a team in the playoffs and they want to go watch. So that I would go from one of those to a 12 o'clock and then to a fall league game or workout or something like that. If two games is a light day. But I did see, I think I wound up seeing 17 teams in a week, which is a lot of teams.
You have some sleep to catch up on.
I think I've caught up. I had 14 hours of sleep 2 minutes ago. I went into hibernate mode. But yeah, I saw a lot of Instructs, and I'm trying to remember. We saw Melvin Adon with the Giants, who hit 100 once or twice, maybe three times. I got hit more than you'd expect for 100. He didn't, there wasn't any base hits, but they made contact more than you'd expect. I saw some right-hander with the Angels named Garrett Richards. He seemed pretty good. Who else did I get a look at? I saw Yadier Alvarez. I also saw him in spring training in Arizona, so he was still hitting 99 and having a dastardly little breaking ball.
He looks like a special one. There's no question.
I saw Riley Pine hit triple digits against the Giants as well.
You know, beyond just velocity, because we talk a lot about these guys who, hey, congratulations, you can throw hard, but you also have to be able to set hitters up. You have to be able to pitch, you know, to your spots. I mean, did any of these guys strike you as they're not just throwers, they're pitchers who happen to throw hard?
No, there's never a, I mean, not yet. Pint was working on a changeup in his second inning. And you can see he's working on a changeup. He's throwing changeups in non-changeups counts. He's throwing a lot of them. And that's what Instructs are for.
Right.
You don't care about wins, losses, whatever. It's developing right. as a player. Some of these guys, there were guys who could do that, but they weren't guys who were throwing really hard either.
Right. No, and that's always the thing. People talk about, oh, are you going into Instructs? And I know what we a lot of times try to tell them is, you know, Instructs is not a great place to evaluate. It's a place to see, oh, he's working on this, okay, and move on. Just because you're right, some of these guys, they're working on the weakest spots in their game. They're not out there showing what they can do in necessarily the most competitive situations.
At one point at the White Sox Instructs game, I watched a pitcher who was born in 1999, and he was the fourth youngest pitcher I'd seen in the last 15 minutes, or fourth youngest player. They at one point sent up three consecutive guys born in the year 2000, the last one born May 31st, 2000.
So 16,
literally half my life ago.
Yep.
And that's kind of insane. I mean, that's what we were looking at, you know, new signees, new draftees. Some guys who are still coming back to work on stuff, maybe guys who were injured during the season and aren't going to fall league. It's basically like minor league spring training. When you go to spring training and you go to the backfield, it's the same basic idea. Like, they could roll innings. Like, if a guy hits 30 pitches or whatever, they can say enough is enough, inning is over. Like, in that second inning that Pines pitched, he got one out. But they ended the inning because we don't want to be here all day. We have things to do.
Yeah. No, yeah, have tea times at Scottsdale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have to go watch our team. Well, in the Giants case, we have to go watch our team in the playoffs. Yeah.
You know, it's definitely interesting. I think, you know, moving forward, I'm going to be curious to see, you know, all those guys that you got those videos of in Instructs and seeing how they move forward. Because you mentioned there's a lot of good players there. But I feel like guys like that, it's always hard to evaluate, you know, much of anything off, oh, what was the scouting report off of what someone saw in Instructs. There's just not a lot there that's super duper telling.
I mean, you can see what he's got in his arsenal.
Right, and you can see basic talent, athleticism, but I mean, in terms of the nitty gritty of what would, you know, eventually separate a guy, it's so far away, I think it's tough to really truly get a great read on it.
That's fair.
Absolutely. All right, well, Josh, before we wrap up, any final thoughts on AFL 2016 for the Bear?
I will say this. Again, we've got four and a half weeks left of Arizona Fall League. Go. If you have a chance, go. It's a crazy setting. Even if Tim Tebow is there, you have a lot of chance to see really great prospects in a setting where it's not a full stadium. Again, the 4 years ago was Seager and Brian and Betts and Russell. Who wouldn't want to go see that when they're pups?
Well, and beyond that, I mean, I remember being a student at Arizona State and like, well, I could go to this class on Friday at 12, but I think I'll go to this Fall League game instead. It's just a nice environment, get out in the sun, do the same thing in spring training, by the way. It's part of the beauty of going to school in Arizona.
We here at Baseball America do not endorse class.
Hey, I was an adult at the time, so it wasn't truancy. I was just had other priorities, apparently. I was a senior at that point, anyway. I was done.
Arizona State education, boys and girls.
Ouch! Dagger! All right, well, I think that'll do it. For Josh Norris, I'm Kyle Glazer. Thanks for tuning in, folks, and we'll have another AFL podcast after I get back from checking it out here in November.
This concludes today's Arizona Fall League podcast. Today's podcast was sponsored by Bowman. Bowman, the first place to find the game's future stars. Visit tops.com for the latest Bowman product news.